outside.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, good morning, everyone. This is Literary Viewpoints, MJ Network, after my sister, Marcia Joyce, and this is going to be so much fun. It's freezing outside, but so what? But the sun is shining, and then they're threatening to make it warm, a little bit warmer later. But it's going to get really hot here because this is one of the my favorite books, my favorite authors. So let me tell you a little bit about the character, but not too much. Imprisoned by M16 for 2 long years in solitary, Nadia suddenly finds herself free again. Well, not for too long, people. But there's a price to pay for her release, another dangerous and near impossible mission. Retrieve the Russian nuclear warhead stolen by her old nemesis, the deadliest of terrorists. These evil people, watch out. There's also one step ahead, and soon Nadia finds herself in the front lines of preventing London from disappearing into a cloud of ash. Only this time, she's ready to pull the trigger at any cost. And she's got 37 hours to do it. And author J.F. Kerwin is here, and he's going to tell us more. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Hi, Fran.
Yes, I have my Facebook wall here, and I'm going to just put everybody and tell everybody I'm on the air. I got a lot of people that commented about the fact that you were on the show. A lot of famous authors.
Okay.
Whose books I review. So here
okay.
we go.
Yep.
Give the listeners a background about 66 Metro, you know, and how did she come to be part of Kandinsky's world, and tell us a little bit about Nadia. She's a pretty smart character here.
Yeah, she is, and a lot of readers like her. She's kind of a kick-ass. Some people say she's like a female Jack Reacher. But 66
yeah.
Meters is the first book, and she starts out, she leaves home at 18. Her father's dead, or so she thinks. She thinks mm-hmm. he's dead, and she goes to join her sister in Moscow. But she kind of falls in with the wrong guy, and he gets carted off to prison, and they send her to prison as well. So her sister is going out with a gangster called Kandinsky, and he manages to get her out on the basis that she will work for him for 5 years. And so she has to, and then she'll be free, and her sister will be free as well. So she agrees to this, but he basically trains her as a killer, which is not what she had in mind.
I don't think she did, but she's really good at it too, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So why would she risk her life and her reputation to do jobs that require that she kills people?
Yeah, well,
so
Katya is really the only family she feels she's got left, and Katya is being really held by Kandinsky. And as time goes by, Nadia realizes that Kandinsky doesn't care for Katya at all, and he will kill her. He'll kill them both if she doesn't do this work for him. So she's really feels trapped, and she's just waiting for this 5 years to be up. And the book 66 Meters is about the final mission that she's on, and so after that she should be freed.
Well, 66 Meters, I just told you, like, I needed an oxygen mask. I could have used one of this one too.
Yeah.
At times, yeah. So for those people that want to do deep sea diving or want to know how it feels to go all the way down there, you might want to read this before you decide to do it, because the author knows how to do it, but you might not. I'm going to tell you. So at the end of the first book, she's released, and she sees her sister again. Then she's taken to an M16 prison, placed in isolation, and devoid of real contact with the world. So how come they do that, and who interrogates her, and what do they want to know? What do they think she knows?
Yeah, so in book one, she's forced to steal a weapon of mass destruction, if you like, called the Rose. This thing can contact nuclear submarines and send them valid launch codes, so it would be very, very bad if it fell into the wrong hands. So by the end of the book, they managed to get it back, and it's safe, but it's been developed by the British, and they never told anyone. They didn't tell America, they didn't tell NATO. So they put her in prison because they don't want her to tell anyone about it, and they also interrogate her to find out who else knows about it. And she's interrogated by somebody called Lorne, who's an MI6 operative.
Mm. Yeah, he's another sneaky character. So why does he not like her? He doesn't like her at all.
Yeah, no, it's a she, actually. And she, she used to go out with a guy that Nadia has started to like, called Jake. So there's a little love triangle in there, because Nadia and Jake hit it off. But Jake and Lorne used to be an item for a short time. So there's obviously the tension crackles whenever Lorne and Nadia are together.
Yeah, I can imagine. And damn, she's around.
Mm.
The things crackle too, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Tell us more about Jake and what is keeping her mind focused in general. I like Jake. He's a good character.
Yeah, so Jake is MI6. When Nadia meets him, she doesn't know he's MI6, so he's actually been sent to spy on her, but they fall for each other, basically. Not in a big way. It's not a romance novel. It's a thriller, but they clearly fall for each other, and there's quite a bit of amorous or tension between them. Mm. And so they're continually looking out for each other in all three books, particularly in book two and book three. So that is keeping her mind focused.
Yes, she's trying to anyway. So when she's released and she sees her sister, she's taken into a different kind of custody. Why don't they trust her? I mean, I was like, oh my God, she's free and now look what's happening to her. That's even worse than being by herself.
Yeah, she's free for about a page and a half.
Yeah, I know, not even.
maybe not even. And then she goes back to Moscow, which is where she's from. But basically, they want her for another mission because a nuclear weapon has been stolen for a submarine. Submarine's been hijacked, and they say they're Ukrainian terrorists. They're not, of course. And they need Nadia to do a deep dive to actually. They have a way of getting somebody inside the torpedo tube, but they need somebody who can dive deep, but is also very, very thin. And Nadia just happens to be in the wrong place at the right time. So they grab her at the airport in Moscow, actually, and force her to do this mission for them.
Which could be very dangerous, like I said.
Yeah.
If you're going to deep sea dive, you don't know what you do. I know, I kept getting nervous, and she didn't exactly have the easy time of it. And it didn't exactly go, you know, nothing goes as well as it's supposed to. If it does, and if there were no problems, it would be a boring mystery.
You got
to have a problem. I mean, seriously. And if I got this back right away. Who cares? No, gotta have something tragic. What could you do? So tell us about what they're trying to find, which is the history of the rose.
Yeah. So the rose, as I say, was this. This was the device that could. Send valid launch codes to a nuclear sub. So that was pretty much taken care of in 66 meters. And the guy who wanted it then just goes to the next best thing, which is actually to take a warhead itself. And this is the start of the book, 37 Hours. He obviously gets hold of the warhead, and Nadia and Jake spend the rest of the book trying to find out where it is and what it's going to be used for.
Well, they do, but we're not going to tell them what it's going to be used for. So it says, who wants it? And this says, my question over here, who wants it? And what does it have to do with a nuclear warhead that's missing and the summit conference in London? You know, as I read the book and I listened to the news and all the bombings and terrorist attacks in London, I go like, it's almost as if this really happened. And that's what's scary between and your country too worries me too. It's like France and London, why don't they just leave everybody alone?
Yeah, it's I mean, we live in evil times, I'm afraid, but they realize later on that there is a G20 summit in London, and they figure out that's probably the target that Salamander has in mind. He's the terrorist who wants to use it. But first they get sent on a slight wild goose chase to Chernobyl, which is where some of the book takes place.
Yeah, I know. I'm getting to know a whole bunch of locations. That's the fun part of doing this, what I do.
Yeah.
Because I get to visit places that I'll probably never see.
Yep.
All over the world. I get to know all the famous places.
Mm.
So tell us more about Lauren and her relationship with Jake and the Colonel and Brinks.
Yes, so Lorne was a minor character in book one, but she has a bit of a stronger part in book two. We get to know her a bit more. I don't want to give away a spoiler, but in her ancestry, there is somebody who did something to Salamander, the terrorist, so that she doesn't know. She's hunting this terrorist, but actually the terrorist is hunting her, and she doesn't know that. In fact, nobody knows it till near the end of the book when certain things happen. So, but she, as I say, she was Jake's boss, but she and him had a fleeting affair, really, pretty much a one-night stand. But ever since then, I'd say there's a bit of tension between them. And then the colonel is a guy who, a Russian colonel, who worked with Nadia in the first book. And he doesn't really like Nadia, but he knows she's effective, so he keeps using her. And even in book three, he will keep using her because she just gets the job done. And Bransk is a new character, and he is interested in Katya, which is who is Nadia's sister.
Well, I don't know if I like either one of them, but we'll see. So, she's attached to Branks. How come? And sometimes I think Nadia Katya just wants somebody to be close to. Doesn't always come up with the right person.
Yeah, she's none of them are very good at picking people. But Katya is in particular. She's not very good at choosing men. But Bransk.
Yeah, I think so.
No, you're not sure in the book. Is Bransk a good guy or a bad guy? But he says very little. He's quite enigmatic. He's an oil magnate of some sort, but he drives a very fancy sports car, and he can fly a fighter plane. So his past is very murky. But Katya just falls for him, hook, line, and sinker. And then Katya trusts him, but Nadia doesn't. Yeah, she doesn't know if what he's
her
really up
to. Her instincts are a little bit better, Nadia.
Mm.
Her instincts are not much, but she's a little bit better.
A little bit better, yeah.
Yeah. When happens, when I mean, I read the prologue.
Yeah.
And then I'm saying, okay, it's got to be something attached to something else. And I'm going like, oh, my God, wait till she finds out. So what happens when she learns the truth about her father's disappearance? And how does this upset emotion for her where she's got to go after the source of the upcoming nuclear blast?
And it's
treatment.
Yeah, no, if you read book one, and then you read the prologue of book two, you go, oh, my God. and that's what happens to Nadia. She realizes that her father is actually alive. And I mean, the whole of book one, you believe he's dead. She realizes he's not. And while Nadia's been in prison, her father has been trying to track down this terrorist, Salamander, because he knows... he's going to come after Nadia as soon as she's released, actually. So he's always been in the background trying to protect Nadia, actually. But you don't know that in book one. It's only in book two it comes out. And, of course, they get to meet finally. So that's quite a sort of interesting moment. And then they try to work together. And for her, she's believed him dead for 10 years. So it's quite an emotional roller coaster for her because she's a little bit annoyed. You know, he's stayed hidden for 10 years, but at the same time, her father's come back from the dead, so it's a big deal.
Yeah, it is a big deal. It's still a shock treatment. Most people would have just like, oh, my God, it can't possibly be, and then pass out.
You know,
you never know. But which brings me in another direction here.
Yeah.
So her father, she gets on a plane with her father, and he goes, but they can't. Acknowledge each other. They can't.
That's right.
So to kill everything. See, I got this straight. I did read the book three times. Okay. sometimes I do only because I want to make sure that my questions are right and that I remember everything. So why is it that she gets off the plane, her father goes another direction, and whatever reason, they take her again? This poor girl can't have 10 minutes of freedom on a plane. Why did they take her again? Poor Nadia.
Poor Nadia, yep. In fact, her father was he worked for the special forces, but he avenged his own father. His own father was killed in a mining accident in Russia, and three of the guys who were meant to be running the mine well and looking after the safety, they weren't. They were just taking the money. So when the mine collapsed and 30 people were trapped, including his father, yeah, one of the guys ended up in the Politburo, so he escaped any kind of responsibility for what he did with the mine. So Nadia's father basically was a trained killer, and he decided to take law into his own hands to achieve justice. So he went after the this guy and killed him. But he killed him in front of the son, which was a pretty nasty thing to do. And that son turned out to be the colonel who was helping Nadia. So in book one, the colonel, they don't know this. And it's only in book two, the colonel finds out. He realizes she is the daughter of the one man the colonel really wants to kill, more than Salamander. So that's why she gets arrested again. And there's a very tense scene in the metro underneath Moscow Airport. I think it's one of the tensest scenes in the whole book, actually, when he finds out that she's her father's daughter, and he just wants to kill her there and then, but he can't. So that's quite a twist as well. So there's this kind of father thing works both for Nadia but also the colonel. So
that was scary, I know. And she's amazing, because the way you wrote her, just the fact that she doesn't get too flustered about anything. She just handles it, and that's it. But I guess she has to be tough after what she's gone through. So Salamander, what a name. A real salamander is not that dangerous, but this guy is. So tell us about Salamander and his relationship to Blue Fan and Chang Yi. Because we have to bring the Chinese in, people.
Yeah, we do.
We don't get to really know Blue Fan. I hope we get to know him in the next book, or unless, of course, you're going to kill him off, which is perfectly okay.
No, the next book starts with Blue Fan, actually. And Blue Fan is a very interesting character. It's based on somebody I know, but I won't say who.
Better.
Yeah, it's based on a real person. So Salamander was, he's getting on, he's nearly 70 years old, but about in the late 80s, he was a spy sent to North Korea, because North Korea, even back then, it was trying to start a kind of nuclear weapons program. I mean, a very basic one. It had one reactor, and so it was basically making a dirty bomb. And Salamander was a spy at the time, and he was sent then. He kind of derailed their nuclear program. But then he got sacrificed in some political shenanigans, and he got sent to jail, and his wife got killed. So he is really angry. I mean, he has a reason to be angry, but not to the extent that he wants to, nuke London. But there's certainly, he has some reasoning as to why he wants revenge on certain people. But yeah, he's had a pretty unhappy past as well. So Blue Fan is actually his granddaughter. You don't find out that till right at the end of the novel. Mm-hmm. And then the next novel, book three, the final one, which comes out in December, it actually starts with Blue Fan.
Well, I'm not going to ask this question. But I'm not going to, you don't have to, don't answer it. I truly hope that Nadia doesn't disappear, or that she finally gets free. And then Katya realizes that being friends with this guy is a bad thing. But then sometimes ending a book that's really, in a different way, and making it like, is sometimes, you never know. So why does Salamander want to destroy Nadia? What did she do to him that he wanted to do? I don't like this guy. And you're going to bring him back, of course. You want him to bring him back. He has to come back.
Yeah, no, he's back in big time in book three. Book three is Nadia versus Salamander. That's it. Yeah, so Nadia, in book one, 66 meters. So Nadia, her enemy there was Cheng Yi, and he's actually Salamander's son. Salamander sent Cheng Yi to get the rose, and Nadia didn't actually kill Cheng Yi, but she brought him down, and Salamander knows that. So he wants not just to kill Nadia, he wants to torment her a bit before, which kind of starts in 37 hours and continues a little bit in the final book as well. For him, killing is easy. It's too easy. So he wants to torment people before he destroys them.
That's always fun, though. Sometimes you got to do it too. I often think about that. Yeah, that would be fun to do that. Not kill anybody, but, to torment them. I could see myself doing that. Yeah. Before I just saying, forget about it. I'm not doing that for you. So the scene, I was telling my 4-year-old nephew that loves sharks, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as I'm learning about the leopard shark and the skeleton, all these sharks, and I'm telling them to RT, and he's telling me all about them. He knows every one of them.
Okay.
I mean,
great.
The kid is a genius. So I said, I'm reading a book about sharks. Can you explain these to me? And I call him my shark man. So how did you create the scenes with the shark? And this has to be some of your first-hand experiences.
Yeah.
And how did you choose the sharks? Because I have to tell him this. He wants to know. Because he was like so excited. You're reading a book about sharks.
Yeah. So I've dived a lot with sharks all over the world, mainly in the out in Asia and a little bit in Australia. I've never dived with a great white, but I've dived with tiger sharks, blue sharks, hammerheads. And years ago I went on a shark feed. So you sit there and you watch the sharks feed, and you see once the blood is in the water how crazy they go. Even though you're there, I mean, they leave you alone. I mean, you know, mostly sharks are very safe and they're not interested in humans. But when you see them tearing apart some bloody tuna or something like that, you think, oh my God. So that's how I kind of created the scenes from diving with, I've dived with some very big sharks, like 15, 20 feet. So they're really scary. And so it is from first-hand experience. So quite a lot in there is actually from my diving, not the actual, the shark attack, which happens, that's based from watching this shark feed. But the rest, I've dived, I've seen tiger sharks and blue sharks, and they're scary.
I was
they're
only disappointed
scary,
that you didn't take some pictures so I could see them.
Yeah, next time.
Yeah, you got to put pictures or just email. You got to email pictures because that would have made it. I mean, I could picture it in my mind. Then what I had to do was I had to look up every shark to see what they look like.
Yeah.
And then I read up with them, and then my nephew said to me, "Don't you know that?" I go, "Like, excuse me, I know you're four, but really." He does. He knows a lot. So what happens when Sergi and Nadia connect, and when does she realize that Jake is back in her life again? And she likes both of these guys. She's also having some good fun here.
Yeah, she's a bit naughty. But she's been locked away for 2 years, and she's just 25 years old, so her hormones are pumping. So she's been locked away, and she's heard nothing from Jake. And so she thinks he's left her and just doesn't care anymore. So she meets this guy, Sergei, who's a submarine commander, sort of classic, tall, dark, handsome Russian guy. And so she has a has a fling with him, but she doesn't know if she can trust him or not. And then almost immediately she realizes Jake, not only is Jake around, but Jake had been kept from her. So she feels pretty guilty. But in one sense, she has a an interesting few days from Sergei to Jake. So she makes up for some lost time while she's been in prison, let's say.
Who can blame the girl? I mean, nothing like branching out. Nadia, just, pick one. As a matter of fact, if you don't like those two, find a third one. What the heck?
Yeah.
But you've got to be careful because that's not a good, role model for her sister, but her sister's doing worse, so it doesn't really matter. Then we come to Lauren that I really hate. Which means you did a good job because I really hate her.
Yeah.
Why does she wants Nadia out of the way in the worst way? And what happens when she realizes that Nadia might be the key to what she wants to know about the nuclear warhead and where it might be? So what is she going to do about that? Because actually Lauren can't stand her, and she's jealous of her because she's got the guys and she doesn't. Poor thing.
Yeah. So Lauren thinks Nadia is a maverick, and I mean, to some extent she is. Mm-hmm. She doesn't really work for the Russian government. She's not really had the proper training. She's been trained by gangsters, whereas Lorne is professional MI6, Secret Service. So and of course Nadia is dating Jake, Lorne's ex, who Lorne would quite like to have back. So there's many reasons she would like Nadia out of the picture, and she towards the end, she manages to actually get Nadia out of the picture, but then she does realize that the only way out of this is with Nadia, because Nadia knows key things, and so she has to bring her back in. She doesn't want to, but she does. Lorne, at the end of the day, is professional, and she says, okay, so she does bring her back in. Yeah.
I don't like her, though.
No.
I wouldn't even trust her as a friend, because I would think she would take a knife and literally dig it somewhere.
Yeah,
so,
Lauren has no friends.
Yeah.
She has no friends.
I see, I'm not wrong, people. She's horrible. You're going to love the character. Because is she in the next book, too?
No.
That's good.
No, she's gone.
I'm sure you'll find somebody else that's evil to put in there. No, not a problem.
Yeah, I do.
You see, the problem with some mystery books is that the evil character turns good and then it gets boring.
Oh, that doesn't happen.
I mean, you don't want to do that because
that
would kill the whole deal here.
Yeah.
The final scenes where several of Nadia's divers and how did you create the final scenes where there are several of Nadia's divers and several salamanders? And how can people, this really got me because I really needed, at that point I was going to go get the oxygen mask, seriously.
Yeah.
How could people fight underwater, and what is the difference between fighting on the water and fighting on the land? That must be harder. So how did you create that? Because I was like holding my breath.
Yeah, no, I've actually, a friend of mine, we tried it. And of course the water flows.
Thank you.
I tried it. It's really hard. It's because it's funny. You try and hit somebody or, you know, punch somebody, but the water slows you down. So you just end up pushing them. So, the actual fight scene, it occurs underneath London in the sewers, which brings another dimension into it. But they basically, I mean, it's spear, guns, and knives. I mean, you need, because you cannot really use like kung fu or anything. It's just not going to work. And as I say, I've tried it. So that's what it comes down to. You're going to use the kind of spear, guns, or knives underwater. That's really your only option, and they have a couple of these jet powered machines to drive them through the water, and they use actually something called a flechette, a little bit of a spoiler, which is a gun which can fire like tiny little spears, so like needles, little syringes, and they're tipped with poison. So Salamander's men have these, and that's how they kill some of the ones with Nadia.
Well, you know, to be very honest, this would really make a great video on YouTube.
Yeah, I know. I'm waiting for Netflix to call me.
And yeah, I would think so. And I would think, they have it on Reel 13. They have videos and documentaries and stuff like that. But definitely, this would seriously make a great television movie because everybody would be, there would be something for everybody. It's great. So, poor Katya. What happens to Katya that takes its toll on poor Nadia? And when is Katya going to wake up and realize, get with the program here?
Yeah. So, well, it's a kind of a spoiler what happens to Nadia, to Katya. So maybe I shouldn't say, but Nadia is very, very unhappy. I mean, actually, my sister called. She's reading the book late, and she called me out of the blue the other day, and she said, "Oh my God, you killed Katya." She just called me to say, "Oh my God." So it's really tough because Nadia, the whole of book one, she spends saving Katya, and then towards the end of the book two, Salamander does the deed and kills Nadia's sister. So there you go. Spoiler.
I wasn't going to tell that part. I wasn't going to tell that part because I cried when that happened.
Yeah,
then I was hoping that you would reincarnate her in the next book.
No.
Like they're doing on one of the soap operas on television.
Yeah.
They're reincarnating people, and I'm going like, why would you even want to do that? Because once you're dead on the program, it gets boring when you come back to life. So, what is the significance of radiation in relation to Nadia? That's scary, too, because radiation poisoning from a nuclear blast could really kill you. I looked that up, too.
Yeah, so Salamander is hiding out in Chernobyl. And so Nadia and Bransk actually go to find him.
Mm.
And it is still, so I've done a lot of research on, I used to work in nuclear power, and I know people have been to Chernobyl, and even though they put this big new sarcophagus over it, it's still intensely radioactive inside. And that's where Nadia has to go. So it makes for a good thriller because they have this Geiger counter and it's going click, 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 and it's accelerating, so you know they're getting blasted with radiation. So the big question is, does she get a fatal dose? That's what she's worried about. And so there's one point she can only stay maximum 30 seconds in this place, and I think she makes it out in 27 seconds. So it's good for a writer to play with it. It's really time to.
It is scary. You didn't try that, did you? You didn't try that.
No, but I've
thinking about it.
I've seen more things than I should have. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I hope you're done trying things for the third book, because I can't wait to see what happens when you write another book about something else. There's got to be more. So, I read chapter 17 several times. What is the significance in chapter 17 of the gray eyes, and what is the significance of 200 Rem in relation to Nadia? And what is the purpose of this drug that I looked up? Oh, my God.
Yeah, so the gray eyes, I mean, particularly in the first book, they say Nadia has gray eyes, tombstone eyes, and killer's eyes. And in the first book, she doesn't want to be a killer. But, of course, by the end, she is. And in this book, she's very much a killer. But she has these killer's eyes. And her father has these killer's eyes. And, so there's this scene. Again, that's a spoiler I won't go into, but there's this scene which is really about the gray eyes and between her and her father. But I won't give that one away. And then the 200 grams.
Don't give it away. But I often wonder sometimes, I just added this thought, that, there are a lot of killers out there. And I'm reading, for anybody wants to know, it's phenomenal. I finished it this morning, started it yesterday. It's one of those books like yours that give me eye strain. Pound of Flesh, Alex Gray. And when is it okay for a killer to kill somebody and get away with it? That's my point. I mean, in that book, people get away with it. In I'm reading Active Betrayal by Matt Dunn. Oh my God! And the main killer is somebody that everybody wants to kill, and yet I'm saying you can't kill him because he's doing it for the right reason. So when is it okay to get away with it? I mean, is she going to get I'm not going to ask, but I imagine Nadia has killed so many people. Does she feel guilty ever?
Yeah, she does. She feels more guilt for the people who Salamander has killed because she didn't stop him. So in the third book, she goes through some angst where she's thinking of all the people that died because she never pulled the trigger on Salamander. When there's a chance she has in Chernobyl and she doesn't pull the trigger and then he kills her. So it's a difficult call for an author. Because we all want some kind of justice at the end of the day. And it can be rough justice. So if she's, if somebody is killing a psychopath, you think, well, okay, in a book, maybe they can get away with it. But it's a hard call for an author to make because, justice runs deep in all of us. Yeah.
It's hard because sometimes if you don't pull the trigger, someone's going to pull it on you. And they can't pull it on her because you can't do that. I mean, that would be very sad. And I'm not going to ask which guy, if anyone, that she winds up with in book three. But we'll see. Jake and Nadia talked and wanted to see if the mole, there's a mole. And I don't mean the kind on your face, people. Say somebody that leaks out, a bad person. So what would Jake and Nadia talk and wanted to see if the mole would take the bait. So how did you create that scene? We're not going to say who the mole is because that would kill the whole deal here. Because they're going to just say, oh, you got to be kidding. How did you create that scene? And I said, oh, my God. I said, you got to be kidding. Oh, my, that was good.
Yeah. So, they realize there's a mole because Salamander is just one step ahead of them in London. And they realize somebody is telling him, when people are going after him, somebody is telling him that they're coming. So they know there's a mole, but they don't know who it is. So they that scene, I was doing an experiment, so I don't want to sound like a mad professor, but I do experiments with pilots, and we put them in strange situations and in a simulator cockpit. I've just been doing it this week, actually, and then we see how they react. But we wire them up to look at their heart rate. We put an eye tracker on them so we can see where they're looking, and we look at their heart rate, the breathing rate, if they're sweating, things like this. So I was doing that last year when I wrote this scene, and I just thought, why don't I use this? So they managed to to do this for somebody, and they can but they're watching his reactions, and they can tell when he is they can tell if he's lying, basically. So that's kind of how they unmask the mole. So it's that was fun. That was a lot of fun. It's using my work to feed the book.
Yeah, it is. It makes it more credible, though.
Because yeah.
I figure half of the stuff that you're writing about is something that you've actually practiced. You got to be careful here, people.
Yeah.
So Nadia, poor Nadia, she can't win. Mm. So she goes to the doctor, and he says, let's put your affairs in order.
Mm.
And how come?
Yeah, so she's received a dose of radiation, which is kind of like a 50-50. It could develop into cancer, it might not, but he says, you need to put your affairs in order just in case. It's a tough scene.
It is, because then we wonder what's going to happen to her in the next book, which you don't know what's going to happen in the next book, because you're saying to yourself, oh, well, that's different. So, ouch. Before I forget, because I don't want to forget, Tuesday I have the author of Bones to Pick at 10. The 26th New York Times author, Reese Hirsch, will be here for The Insider. And on the 30th, Carla Negus will be here for Thief's Mark. On the 11th, I don't know how I did this, three shows in 1 week. I must have been, I don't know, we're dreaming. Lynn and Valerie Constantine will be here for The Last Mrs. Parrish, and that's got some good press. And on the 2nd, New York Times author David McAuliffe for Reload. And on the 9th, I have a panel show. We're going to talk about exactly what we're talking about. How do you create the murder scenes? How do you create the forensics? How do you present forensics when the police come? How do you do it correctly? And nobody's better than D.P. Lyle to do that, because he writes for all these criminal programs. Bruce Coffin will be here. FBI agent Michael Tabman will be here for when the FBI takes over. And lawyer Larry Thompson will be there to say how you should present it to court. And if you want to know what to buy for Hanukkah and Christmas, which is just a couple of weeks away, start with 66 meters. Go on to 37 hours, and by the 14th of December, you could get the third one. How's that for being good? If you want Pound of Flesh by Alex Gray, I can't put it down. Acts of Betrayal is great. And for kids, for those who want to be a firefighter, Firefighter Leo to the Rescue is a fantastic book for kids who want to pretend to be a firefighter. I just read Quick and Dirty by Stuart Woods. It's interesting. And for those of you that want to know what I'm reading, that might be a little controversy when the review comes out. What Happened by Hillary Clinton was sent to me a couple of days ago. And yes, I'm reading it very slowly. That's all I'll say about that one. So let's talk about Simon and what his role is in this particular case. He's another person I'm not crazy about.
Yeah, he's based on someone else I know.
You must all love interesting characters here.
Yeah, I just Simon's a colleague at work, and he hasn't read the book, and I'm glad he hasn't. Simon is meant to be a friend of Jake, but he's a snake in the grass, and
I know, that's what makes him good.
Yeah, he's a badass. He nearly gets both Jake and Nadia killed right near the end, and because Jake trusts him, and Nadia manages to save the day on that one. Yeah.
Well, you sort of set the tone that the father was there, Vladimir. So how does he get out? That was good. That's another way you have to hold your breath and swim.
Yeah. How does Vladimir get out?
How does he get out? You've read the prologue. It's in front of me. He was
cuffed
and hooded, and his guards made a fatal mistake because his hands were behind his back. So how does he get out? Most normal people would say, I give up.
Yeah, no, Vladimir doesn't give up. he says there's no defeat until you quit, which is what Bono from U2 says, actually. But no, he used to have a title. He used to be called the Serpent, because he's handcuffed behind his back. But you know, some people can do this. They can actually slip the cuffs sort of over their butts and get out. Not everyone can do it, but about 1 in 10 people can just do it. And he can do it. But the whole scene in the prologue is very well choreographed. I spend a lot of time working this out and thinking about the angles and the truck and everything. And I drew it. I drew lots of diagrams of how this is going to work. Mm-hmm. And actually, the prologue, I wanted to be just like a Jack Reacher chapter.
Mm-hmm. It
does. Yeah, it really thanks. And I think it works. And actually, some people have said, why don't you do a book just with this guy? but I think Jack Reacher is better, so I won't compete with him.
Well, he has a different style, Lee Child. I only read one or two of the books. Like, for some reason, his publicist doesn't send them to me, and I can't understand why. Because I, you know, trust me. I don't know why he doesn't send. He doesn't send it. But we'll work on that one. But, I mean, you didn't actually try to do this by yourself. You just drew the pictures. You didn't actually act out the scene, did you? That would be terrible. You know.
But I mean. I have done a lot of martial arts, and I just did a blog on this about writing fight scenes, because a lot of books I read, it's wrong. You wouldn't know unless you do a lot of fighting. And even sometimes with Jack Reacher, I think, no, this wouldn't work. But it's okay. It's fiction. But this one, I could work it out. It would work. So, yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm going to have to, when your next book comes out, I'm going to have to do a panel show in January or something, because that's the problem. I read so many books, and a lot of them lose it because the crime scene is corrupt, and I can just write my own. I know, the lawyers are like, you got to be kidding me. The judge, you know, votes on, you know, motions that, like, he would never do that in real life. And after reading enough of Larry Thompson or John Land or your books or Alan Topol, who are lawyers, and even Mike Tabman, and I see him I watch his videos of crimes and criminals, whatever, on YouTube. I mean, they present it all wrong. And that's what makes it even harder. So when they learn the two moles and who they are, people, it's not the ones on your face, just to remind you, these are sneaky people that are trying to hurt the people that are good people. How did you create those scenes? Because that was another heart-stopping thing.
Yeah, so this was something I put in very near the end. I mean, I was almost, I think I'd already sent it to the publisher, and I thought, you know, there's one mole. You think, okay, but then I wanted there to be two, and actually... they're actually a couple, you realize. So it was a very late decision to do that, but I think it really works, because you might think, okay, there's one mole, but when you realize there's two, it really ramps up the tension, because they've taken out one mole, so they think, okay, and they relax, and then right near the end, Nadia realizes somebody is still supplying Salamander with information, so you think, oh, shit. Jake, I mean, she's battling Salamander, so Jake has to sort it out. But he does, he works out who it is just in time. Yeah.
And did you practice that too? You didn't act out that scene too?
No, not that one. No, that was that kind of happens a little bit off,
this
off
is
scene.
Good. We don't want you to try the ones that are going to get people killed, though.
No.
No. Now, I'm finding also that a lot of the books that I've been reading, all like 5,000 of them, seriously, I counted my reviews the other day, and I was mind-boggled that since 2009 when I started, I go like, oh, my God, you've read an awful lot of books. How did you choose where you wanted the book to take you? Because the setting has a huge part in keeping the reader interest and not putting, you know, if you write it in one setting or two, it's okay. It depends if that's all it lends itself to. But then when you get these authors that write books in 47 countries, I'm going like, why? And then all of a sudden I'm going, I have to circle it, get my graphic organizer out for when I was teaching reading, and say, okay, put the characters, the places, the settings, so I can remember. So how did you choose exactly where to place the settings in this book?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. So I tend to choose a couple of settings I know really well,
yeah.
and then a couple that I would like to know really well. So actually, I've never been to Moscow, I like a lot of Russian things. I find it a bit fascinating. So I did some research on Moscow. And, of course, Chernobyl, I knew a lot about Chernobyl because I used to work in that industry, but I'd never been there. Whereas the island where they dive, it's called Anspida in the book. That's an anagram for Sipidam, which is a real place. Mm-hmm. And, for example, they dive in a cave where there's a dolphin skeleton. And there is a cave with a dolphin skeleton. You can dive there. It's there. So I knew that place mm-hmm. very well. And, of course, London, where it all finishes, I knew very well. And in the next book, it starts in Hong Kong, when I've been to Hong Kong many times. Yeah, Yeah, that book, there's Hong Kong, and then there's Sudan, which I've not been to. But I've been to many places around Sudan, so I can mm-hmm. I can sort of, you know, make it realistic, because I know enough about the area. And I was actually very near there in August, so brushing up research. Research can be a tough thing, you know, having to travel to exotic places.
So I've learned from my next book that I actually have to look up things about World War I and World War II, and I have to find out more about the sterilization camps. My grandmother was in one.
Oh, dear.
And, yeah, she was. And I have to get the timeline. And I actually have a cousin in England that I found that found me on Facebook, and she's been feeding me all the information about my grandfather's family. I never knew he had so many brothers and sisters. I only knew that he had a brother and two sisters, and I didn't know there were like almost 10 that I'm getting to know. Plus the fact that her father is 99 and he was my grandfather's nephew, and the sisters. So the research, you never know what you're going to learn. So would you ever write, are you going to write a book with a setting in France? Ever?
I think I was thinking about this yesterday. It's funny you mention it. So, because I know Paris very well, and Paris is a great city for writing back. So everyone has an idea of Paris. So I think I will do that. I was thinking about what might be the next book after the one that's coming out in December, and then I was thinking.
See how
you
do this?
Yeah.
I just saved you the trouble of thinking. I mean, there's so many things that Paris attacks. I did 3 shows with several law enforcement officers on the Paris attacks, the Brussels attacks, and I'm waiting for Mike Tabman to email me as to what he wants to do, one on the Las Vegas attack and bullying and hazing in fraternities. And I think that's another important topic that we're going to do. So before you, and I have a couple more questions on my little paper.
Yeah, here. Okay.
You're going to bring in a new character in the next book. We're just going to touch on him. Who is the chef? And I can imagine what he makes. I don't cook, so I wouldn't even know what that meant. Who is the chef? And why does she want to go after him or contact him?
Yeah, well, she wants to contact him. So the chef, you hear his name in book one, and then right at the end of book two, she says, I need to call a chef. So the chef is the guy that actually trained her. So he wasn't Kadinsky, who was the gangster. The chef is kind of Jack Reacher's nightmare. The chef is assassin. He's a master assassin who trains people in his camp in Siberia. There's oblique references to him in book one and book two, but in book three you meet him. And actually the readers, because a number of people have read book three already, my pre-readers, and they say, you know, you should write a book about the chef. So they really like this guy. He's he's no nonsense, and he said some interesting things, because I'm doing some editing at the moment. So I really like the chef, and actually when you said do something in France, I was thinking maybe I might do a book with him in Paris.
Read the last page, which we're not going to give it away.
No, don't.
You said it starts in Hong Kong, and we won't say who's on the way there, and we won't say if anybody's going with the person. And then she gets a phone call, and you know very well that poor Nadia is going on her next mission, and who knows if she's going to make it out. She's got to make it out. I don't know. You never know. And with mystery writers, if it doesn't end happy at the end, they're just going to expect you to write a sequel after that anyway. So what is next for her? And what is she, and going after some salamander for the last time, did you create any death-defying scenes that is going to scare me or make me need an oxygen mask again in the third book?
there's a little less diving, but they go very deep, and yeah, some scary stuff happens down there. But it all comes to the last five chapters, really. I think it all accelerates. A friend of mine, he just read it, and he said he stayed up till 3 a.m. trying to finish it because he couldn't put it down. So I was very happy with that. But yeah, no, there's some pretty death-defying stuff goes on. It's quite nail-biting because you really don't know if she's going to make it.
All right, you have to send it to me then. That's it.
Yeah.
You have to send it before it even comes out. Got to send me a copy of the book so I could tell you, so I could give you some accolades before. For those people that don't know and didn't see my Facebook wall, I have the Amazon link to all of his books on my Amazon, on my Facebook wall as we speak. And then Cheryl from Partners in Crime would like me to post the review after the show. I will. My brilliance will come out. Yes, it will. I didn't give any spoilers away, and I think I really did a good job on this one. Seriously. This is pretty good. My first sentence, whoa. This is really good. I didn't kill it. I'm impressed. Hardest part when you write a book review is to figure out what to write to catch the reader, anybody that wants to buy the book. So you're never going to see me write this book is about, or isn't that nice that he did that? I don't care. It has to be something that no one else will think of and no one else will ever think of. So if Nadia could, before we ask you what's next and where everybody can learn about everything that you wrote ever again and the title of the next book, if Nadia could speak, what would she say to readers about herself? And what would she say about the fact that Katya is not here? Because it's up to me. I would destroy the person that did it.
Yeah, what would Nadia say? I often think if Nadia was real, she would come after me with her gun, torture me a lot and kill me, because I have put her through hell. I'm hoping she stays fictional.
About that. She seems so real to me.
Yeah, no, it's true. I get a lot of comments from fans who really like her, and they say it's good that a really tough female character like this, who could go up against Jack Reacher, exists. So I have fun writing, very much fun writing Nadia. But I hope we never meet. She will kill me.
You never know. You could turn the corner, and then somebody could be wearing a shirt that says Nadia, and then that would be the end of that. You don't know. But would you ever team her up with another male character and start like another series where she would just be somebody, like in the background and somebody else?
Well,
with her?
I did think about that a few months ago.
Really thinking on my feet here.
I decided that book three would be the end. So it is pretty much the end. But if the publisher said, hey, here's $10,000, write another one, then that's what I'll do.
I'm sure people are going to email the publisher to tell them, but you're going to do one about the chef. That would really be good. And maybe Nadia will come in and help him out or whatever. You never know.
Yeah, that's a possibility. That's a possibility,
Well, before I forget, I would like to say that Partners in Crime, which Providence Books, is doing my blog tour as we speak. So my new book, A Daughter's Promise, and I was absolutely jumping up and down for joy because you don't know who reads the book. You get people that join the blog tour, and you don't know how they're going to review it. Well, I got the most glowing review this morning from Wall-to-Wall Books, and I cried when I read it. I was so touched. It was so beautiful what they wrote about the book. And the promise is that I would never put my mom in a nursing home because she had Alzheimer's. And to be honest, that was probably, it was 10 years of very little travel or doing anything, but she had a better life at home, and she was treated royally by the aides that I treated royally, and I never had to worry if I walked out of the house for 5 minutes that something was going to happen, except, of course, if there was a substitute aide, at which point I didn't go anywhere. But that was my promise to her, and I'm very excited. I've got a whole bunch of 5-star reviews, a whole bunch of nice comments, and I hope everybody buys it, because some of the proceeds will go to Alzheimer's in memory of my mom.
Yeah.
If I ever get to write, you know, yeah. So what's next for you? Where can we learn more about your work? And what's the title of the third book, and when am I getting it?
Okay. So the title is 88 Degrees North. It's in each of the books has numbers. So it's 66 meters, 37 hours, then 88 North, which is where it ends, up near the North Pole. Actually, very cool.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So you'll be getting it, Fran, probably the beginning of December, and then it comes out 2 weeks later, the 14th of December. And the best place to look is my website, jfkerwin.com. It's also on Facebook as well. Maybe that's easier for most people, JF Kerwin on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I put all my blogs on Facebook anyway, so you can either look at the website. And there's actually a newsletter if people want to sign up from the website, so... And I tweet
so
as
if
well.
Any,
so, yeah.
Well, this is a great series, and I'm sure that I'm going to get it soon. And I'm sure that the chef will be another character that Fran's going to want to read about.
Mm.
And maybe you should just do a documentary on deep sea diving or something.
Maybe.
Because I could never do something like that. But you know, anything above my ankles, forget it. But. I was so interested, and like I said, my 4-year-old nephew, Robbie, when I told him about the skeleton sharks and the other types of sharks, leopard sharks, and he was like, you know, this is what you have to know. And I go like, excuse me, I'm only 4. I got him books on sharks, and he was like enthralled. So he said he wants to be a marine biologist.
Yeah.
And he's cool. Yeah, you never know. But he actually does know, and I looked up the facts that he told me, and he was right. That's even scarier. So, I want to thank you so much. How is it in France? Is it beautiful? Is it warm? Because it's cold here, but it's beautiful outside.
Yeah, no, it's been quite, it's not, yeah, it's okay. It's not cold. Yeah, it's not been warm. It was very warm last weekend, but it's we're having a little bit of an Indian summer, so it's not been too bad here.
Yeah, us too. Us too. Today it's going to be like, it was 40 degrees this morning. And it was a 73 now. Tomorrow it's going to be about the same, and the rest of the week it's going to get colder, which is just fine, because I don't put it, and if it's anything under, you know, over 45 degrees or 50, I'm crazy. I don't even put on a jacket. I don't know. So I want to thank you so much. And
okay,
when
pleasure.
I get the book, I will email you as to whether you want to do an interview in December or in January, whichever is more convenient.
Yeah.
Okay.
So great.
Thank you so much. The sun is shining. And remember, Hanukkah, Christmas, buy a couple of thousand copies of the book, and then you won't worry about it if it's cold outside. You'll have something to read. Have a nice day, everybody, and bye.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Fran. Bye.